2 weeks ago today, I was honored to be invited to a viewing of a lady that had a common name, Jones. But that was the only thing common about her. The line to get to the family to express one's condolences was 2.5 hours long. Hundreds of people, not just church people, were reminiscing of the impact that Velma Jones had had on their life. And I was thinking of that Hebrews, the 11th chapter and verse 4 came to mind, where in talking about the faithfulness of Abel, the writer of Hebrews said, though he is dead, he still speaks. As we grow older, I believe that one of the priorities of our life becomes doing those things which will outlive us in their goodness. That people might look back with pleasant and profitable memories of the things that we decide to do while in the body. I believe that's the very cause that propelled the message of the Apostle Paul that said in Romans 15 and verse 4 and 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11, those things that were written before, listen to them. That there were a group of great men and women that walked upon the same soil as we, but accomplished great things in their relationship to God. And from them we have a message that we deem to be very important. But also there were those that chose to live the wrong way. And from those, there's a message also. For their infamy speaks even though they are dead. I believe that for every Abraham, for every Jacob, for every Joshua, for every Daniel, there are 10,000 Lots. But I would suggest to you that Lot has information that is important to us as we try to live spiritually. Let's see the lessons that Lot left. He's mentioned first in the 11th chapter of the book of Genesis, verse 27. He's the son of Haran, the nephew of Abram. He journeyed with Abram and Sarai from Haran to Canaan, then to just east of Bethel, then to Egypt, back to Bethel, and finally to Ai. And at Ai, we read in Genesis, the 12th chapter, verse 1, through the 13th chapter, in verse 4, about the life of Lot. Abram and Lot were mega rich. If there were lists then, as there are now, of the richest men in the world, they would have been on that list. Perhaps even toward the top of that list. And those great possessions materially had an effect, just like great possessions today have an effect upon mankind. Note, if you would, in Genesis the 13th chapter in verse 6, the Bible says, "And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, that they could not dwell together." They both had great herds. And the land of Palestine could not provide enough food and water. And consequently, the herdsmen of Lot and the herdsmen of Abraham start to fussing and fighting. And the problem became worse until it got to Abram. And he set up a conference with his nephew. So what we're talking about here is a talk between an uncle and a nephew. And it was brought about by the fact of the employees of each one feuding. Resolution had to be made. And I think that right there at that point, we would be amiss if we did not draw an application just from the information that we have covered so far. And that application is that physical possessions are not worth having family trouble over. Have you ever known people who split a relationship in their family that could have been productive because of arguing over things? Even more, physical possessions are not worth causing strife and division within the spiritual family. Perhaps you, as well as I, have heard of or been involved in situations where congregations had trouble because of the ones that had and the ones that didn't have. It was that way in Corinth, you know. And the thing, the material things, though intrinsically not sinful, cannot become such a part of our life within our physical or our spiritual family that we don't get along, because getting along is that which propels us to an activity that is pleasing to God. Peter said of the Apostle Paul, you listen to what he has to say, but some of the things he says are hard to understand. But it's not hard to understand the applications from Lot, because they apply clearly and succinctly to every one of us. What we need is more people like Abram that are willing to give up first choice. That just seems un-American. We have teams that I think maybe don't put out their best effort to end up with the worst record so they get first choice. We have owners of great businesses whose blood pressure rises because the ping pong ball bounces the wrong way. And instead of getting LeBron James, they get Jason Amalong. First choice has become epidemically important in our society. If you don't believe that, watch the commercials. Number one. If the great men of all time were to be ranked by God, Who would be first, Abram or Lot? But yet, to gain that position, he gave up that position. Isn't that something? So then the meaning of that becomes universal, even within the physical family. To become first in love, one gives love. Right? It's a concept that is without flaw. Being willing to give up first choice. Abram and Lot stood there and they looked over the whole land. If you know the territory over there, they were probably standing on top of one of those mountains. Be hard to see anything if you weren't standing on top of a mountain in that area. And as they were looking eastward from near their camp at Bethel, they would see the Jordan Valley and around Jericho. Even now, that area is watered well by abundant springs and just produces crops magnificently. I want you to put yourself in the position of Abram and Lot. The problem was not having enough land to feed the herds and looking out and seeing that. Looks like there's enough food there to me. But that's only looking one way. What happens when you turn around and look the other way? Look like grazing pasture to you? Abram knew what the choices meant. He knew what the requirements were of the herdsmen. And there they stood looking at those two choices. What was the mindset of Lot as he looked at those choices? We know what it was because we know of his actions, but I'll tell you what drove the decision, and it was selfishness that drove the decision. Selfishness did not drive Abram, it drove Lot. Indeed, the direction Lot chose looked good to him, and it would look good to those of the world. Even today, as we look at our choices, there are those that look better to the world and less good spiritually, almost on every hand, those kinds of choices. If decisions don't look good to God and you go that way, sooner or later, they're not going to look good to you either. And that's what Lot experienced. You know the story. Lot chose all the plain of Jordan in the direction of Sodom. It doesn't seem from the text that even once he began to consider that he was sacrificing the souls of his family for a few fertile acres of farmland. It seems interesting to me to note that not once did Lot build an altar or call on the name of the Lord in prayer. Do you notice that about Lot? But Abram did it all the time. He would go somewhere and he would be successful because God was with him. Build an altar. He would go somewhere. He would need help. He'd pray to God. He'd see his human frailties. He'd ask God for help. Not one thing, it seems, is recorded from Lot concerning asking for help or giving God credit for the good land that he had chosen. Does it seem to you that anyone that is remotely interested in serving God would head towards Sodom? That seems completely inconsistent to me. David said, "The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way." God was not involved in directing the steps of Lot. Lot was involved in directing the steps of Lot. And Satan was pleased with Lot's decision concerning the way that his life was heading. Another application from the simple lesson of Lot. When the head of the family makes the wrong choice, somebody's going to be hurt sooner or later. It will happen. There are some situations in this world that are difficult to handle, difficult to decide about. David said, Solomon said, "Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned?" Except for Jesus Christ, the wisest man who ever set foot upon the earth brought forth that proverb, not just because it fit his circumstance, but because it fit the circumstance of mankind throughout the ages, us as well as them. Many Christians, as we live in this society that seems to grow closer via transportation and the communication, we have become a mobile society. We have gone away from the rural kind of lifestyle and into a more mobile kind of lifestyle. And as we do that, the decisions come before us that are difficult. As were the decisions that Lot made. And sometimes you and I, even recognizing the danger, say, "I can handle that." But without God's help, we can't handle it. We become a people at times that cannot discern good from evil, Hebrews 5 and verse 14. And we forget that the Apostle Paul admonishes us in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 22 to abstain from all appearance of evil. It's obvious that Lot did not see the danger of his choice, but it's obvious he felt the consequences of his choice. So what messages, what lessons can we learn? If Lot were here to talk to us today, what would he choose for us to take from this place concerning his life and its relationship to God? He would say, "I believe the direction we pitch our tent may well determine our eternal destiny." We pitch our tents today as he pitched his tent then. We choose. I know those who sit here this day that have turned their back upon what the world would perceive to be great opportunity because of their concern for their family and their spirituality. And I have respect for those people that's unspeakable. But the reward will come. If Lot were here today, he would say, "Evil companions corrupt good morals. He would say that no matter how strong you are, that it's easier to be pulled down than it is to pull up. And he would tell us to be careful. He would tell us to let our light shine. Surely we are to let our light shine, but he would tell us with regard to those close companionships that we have that influence so directly our life to be careful who you're around. Lot would tell us that cities, well, may bless us financially, but destroy us and our children spiritually. And I've got to believe that after the timelessness that has occurred after his death, he would have come to full realization of the difficulties that he set before his children with the environment in which he placed them. I know that later he's referred to as righteous Lot, so I know some metamorphosis took place with regard to Lot. And I believe that he would have said, don't go toward Sodom because it's just too much for your children to overcome in the temptations that are there. I believe that Lot would have told us that men and women can be too attached to earthly wealth and as a result be eternally lost. And he might well say that we live in a time of susceptibility that is like no other time since the beginning of the Lord's church, where riches abound at every hand, and that because of that, we need not to be careful, but to be very careful not to let those things change our direction. Lot would say, when it comes time to break from the mistakes of life, you better break clean from them. It's not a tapering off process. And Lot would say, children often reflect the evil results of parental decisions. It's a hurtful thing to see children reacting because of influence that I, as a parent, could have done better. I would say when we make bad choices, someone will be hurt now or later. And that we may repent, but others may not, that we influenced. And we'll feel the pain about that. When we choose too late to be a good influence and we look back and see those that no longer will listen, who laugh and call us hypocrites and are no longer interested, and we'll feel bad that we allowed the time to escape for our influence to do them good. Lot would tell us that there's pleasure in sin, but when one starts, it's very hard to stop. Each one gets easier to do because the stopping mechanism wears out. Lot would say a righteous person can get too close to slippery places, slippery people, and slippery things. And there'll come a point where it will almost seem insurmountable, the fall into degradation, because we've gone too far from the mooring of Christ. And Lot might bring people with him to testify, Surely with regard to consequences, he might bring David. And with regard to associating with that which leads us away from God, he might bring Solomon. And his message would be true and simple. For that's what God chose as a method to communicate with us. A true, simple message that we can apply on Monday as well as on Sunday. Take out the thong book that you have before you and turn to the number that has been given as a song of invitation. And I want you to go back in your mind again with Lot and Abram to that mountain. And let's just say that Lot went back to the mountain after he had lived his life. And he saw again the pastures. They would have still been there. And he saw again the rugged terrain. It would have still have been there. Would he have made the same choice? I don't think so. I think he would have said, Abram, you're the elder. The choice is yours. Thank you for the opportunity. I'll take what you don't take. And maybe they would have gotten together and gotten along. I don't know. But you got to believe that the lessons that Lot learned would have changed the actions if Lot had an opportunity to do them again. And for us, Jesus Christ gives an opportunity to do things again. He gives us an opportunity to take away the sins that have separated us from God and to reestablish, to reconnect to God in such a way that forms that beautiful bond that leads to salvation. And we offer you that opportunity this morning while we stand and sing.